Welcome to this month's look at the cancer headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Bill Nelson, director of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins.
Bill, how about if we start first with a somewhat sobering topic? We saw just recently the death of a Major League Baseball player. Looks like he died of head and neck cancer and maybe related to smokeless tobacco use.
This is Tony Gwynn, and anyone who watched baseball, me included, he was a great player, a classy athlete, and a great ambassador for all that's right about sports in America. He attributed his cancer to the use of smokeless tobacco, and I think he was probably correct about that. I think that was a very responsible thing for him to have done in his life, knowing what a role model he was to athletes that are playing now and to young people everywhere who watch and love baseball. Smokeless tobacco does increase the risk of cancers in the area that the smokeless tobacco gets near, the mouth, the salivary glands in that region, and it clearly increases the risk for it, and there really just is not a reason I can think of to use those products.
In his case, of course, his cancer really got going and really seemed to kill him early. Is that usually the case if people use these sorts of products?
Cancers, of course, are diseases of acquired defects in genes. Some of these defects are inflicted or a result of damage to the genes inflicted by the carcinogen, in this case, the smokeless tobacco product, probably. The constellation of defects that are acquired pretty much fuels the level of aggressiveness that the cancer will have. So sometimes cancers can be smaller, detected early, behave in a more indolent way, and respond wonderfully to treatments. At other times, cancers can grow rapidly, grow malignantly, invade and destroy tissues, travel to other parts of the body, and can be very difficult. And so one of the aspects of use of smokeless tobacco products is to be very vigilant on precancerous lesions that might appear. You've used smokeless tobacco products and you have unusual kinds of lesions or conditions in the mouth, seek medical attention without a doubt.
And maybe that's part of his legacy then, is bringing awareness to this disease, maybe cause more people to go and investigate that.
I hope so. I think when you see people who are loved and admired in our society and culture who disclose very private information about their health for the public good, very oftentimes what you see is that the good is accomplished. And I hope for everyone's sake and certainly for his sake that the memory of him as a great athlete can fuel that kind of interest in decreasing the use of those products.
Outstanding. Let's turn then to a global or a national issue, something that I thought was really quite interesting. This national experiment, if you will, trying to take a look at drugs and cancers and therapies and really getting lots of community hospitals and other people involved in this effort.
Well, what you're talking about is this new study that's being launched that they're going to call the Lung Map Study. And this is kind of unprecedented in what was wired together to accomplish this. Over the past 5 or so years, there's been a flurry of anti-cancer drug development. The drugs that are appearing are drugs that more directly target these defects in genes that fuel cancers. One question is emerging is this individualization of treatment, and each cancer in each individual, even if it's all, in this case, lung cancer, might be different and might respond to a different treatment. How do we manage that? How do we continue to develop new treatments that are ever more and more effective and deliver them to the right people at the right time for the right purpose? Many of the companies that are discovering and developing these new products are different. Literally, 5 different major companies have been brought together, willing to participate in this kind of trial. A large clinical research network has been assembled, called the National Clinical Trials Network, or NCTN, which encompasses over 200 centers. So the access to be able to participate in this trial for anyone who has lung cancer will be really extraordinary and in many ways unprecedented. And so the trial targets an advanced squamous cell cancer of the lung. That's a particular flavor of lung cancer. That's about 1/4 of all lung cancers. It's poorly treated with the therapies we have now. So be brought together literally 5 different agents to be randomized against the best that we have, docetaxel or erlotinib. People will be steered to these particular agents based on testing of which gene defects they have, which will be conducted by a company called Foundation Medicine, looking at 200 different genes. And depending on what gene defects are present, they'll be steered toward the drug or treatment that's most likely to be a benefit that will be a randomized trial against the standard of care. The plan is to treat something like 1,000 people a year on this trial, up to 10,000 by 2022. And the other hope, of course, is that this can be a conduit for the next new exciting treatment can be brought into this infrastructure, it really does seem to be a win-win-win. A win for the pharmaceutical companies if the drug works, a win from the people volunteering to participate in the trial because they're more likely to get a drug that may be more beneficial, and a win for all of us who care about cancer treatment because we can get this done, get it done faster, and get effective treatments approved and out to the public more rapidly. So this is a very, very interesting endeavor.
And very cool. Will there also be the integration of other kinds of gene defects that may be identified while the study is going on into this paradigm?
Over time, especially out to 2022, if this vehicle works, you can imagine several things. If there are critical genes that need to be tested for, they can be incorporated. There'll be other diseases we can take on in a similar manner as well.
Good news. Now we're going to turn to the big meeting for cancer, the ASCO, the American Society for Clinical Oncology meeting, and you've identified two noteworthy studies that you think we need to hear about.
Two clinical trials of note that are going to be rapidly impacting standard of care and the state of the art. One of them is for prostate cancer, where there was a fairly large randomized clinical trial of two agents that we knew were effective. Androgen deprivation therapy, so-called hormonal therapy, that's the standard treatment for advanced prostate cancer, and docetaxel chemotherapy. So this was sort of a predictable idea in a sense, which is at the initial time of treatment, does docetaxel plus androgen deprivation therapy offer any advantage over androgen deprivation therapy alone? And is that advantage more impressive than any additional side effects that might arise? And the difference in adding chemotherapy was quite honestly stunning. It wasn't just better, it was a whole lot better. If you look at the men with advanced disease, I think there's 600 or so in the trial, the median survival difference with the addition of chemotherapy was 17 months. These men living an overall survival of 49 months after, this is with metastatic disease throughout the body in an advanced state, that's a dramatic benefit that will immediately be translated. The practice patterns will be to favor this in younger men with more advanced disease.
Clearly then, the question is, why didn't anybody attempt this before?
There was a perception that has largely been done away with in the past decade that it was a disease that not many men talked about, that many men were diagnosed at an older age, and that any treatment intervention was more likely to be dangerous than helpful. I think that's largely been reversed with men talking about the disease, and now the expectation that even with advanced prostate cancer, that the disease can be controlled for many years, improving quality of life and extending life.
Excellent news. What else do you want us to know about?
Another one I think that'll work its way towards the standard of care very quickly was a randomized trial of exemestane, which is a so-called aromatase inhibitor. This is the type of drug that interferes with the production of female hormones, particularly estrogen, estradiol. Exemestane given along with an attempt to suppress ovarian function versus tamoxifen, the standard of care, also given along with ovarian suppression. For early stage breast cancer, so this is adjuvant therapy in addition to surgery, lumpectomy, radiation, to premenopausal women with breast cancer that makes the estrogen receptor, so-called ER, estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. Treatments given for 5 years. There was a very large clinical trial. I think there were 4,600 women in the trial. The median age is 43. So this is breast cancer for young women. The recurrence rate was suppressed in the setting of exemestane treatment, some 34%, a significant advantage to this approach. And I believe as a result, this will become the standard of care for these women.
Again, really excellent news. On those two good news notes then, we'll end with that. That's a look at this month's cancer headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Bill Nelson, and I do believe in a cure for cancer.